You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, it looks like Linda Martinelli on the road and Dr. Ron stuck at home with the dog. And I understand you're in rainy California.
I am in drenched California. It has really been a storm out here, which, you know, is kind of unusual for them, but they've gotten a lot of rain, some mudslides and different things, but it was an interesting trip.
And I'll take my thank you in advance for getting up at 03:15 hours this morning so we could get dressed and the dog and I throw you into the pickup truck with your luggage so we could get you to San Antonio Airport on time.
Well, I do appreciate it.
Hey, is it?
It's always nice that you will get up. You know, I mean, a lot of guys wouldn't do that. Let's be honest. A lot of guys would say, hey, get yourself there. Leave the car, whatever you want to do. But you always make sure that I get out and get off and get on the airplane and get where I'm going.
And don't forget, I made coffee this morning for you. Hey, is it dark over there? Because it's pitch black over here.
It's definitely dark over here. Rain is letting up a bit, so I understand it's supposed to let up, so that's a good thing. But it's been a very, very, very long day, so I will be anxious after you and I talk to get some sleep.
Okay.
I want to talk about, you know, the other night, you and I had a big adventure. We like to call them the Martinelli Great Italian Adventures. And we had an adventure going to the inaugural ball for Governor Greg Abbott of Texas.
Isn't that cool, being invited to the governor's ball? And we could have gone to the inauguration itself, but the barbecue in the afternoon was just simply fantastic. And the ball, I'll tell you what, there is nothing like Texas pride. You're seeing hundreds of nice looking gentlemen and ladies dressed to the nines, and it was a black cowboy hat and black tie and black boots evening. And I'll tell you what, with George Strait, we were 20 feet away from that guy, and what a phenomenal time we had.
Yeah, I was very excited to see George Strait because I know that he's not going to be touring very much longer, and this is really one of the last opportunities to see him. And not to see him like in a setting where you're in, you know, 500 feet away from him, but where you're just right there. And that it was just great. It was a wonderful event. And like you said, the thing that I really noticed was absolutely different than anywhere else I've been, other than perhaps Italy. The pride in Texas from the people of Texas is just amazing. You know, when you go around Texas, just when you drive through different areas, you see lots and lots of people that fly the American flag and the Texas flag on their property. You can bet that every other house is going to have a Texas star on it, somewhere on the fence, the gate, the front of the house, somewhere. And you know, there's just a lot of pride in that state, and you really feel it. Their Capitol building is amazing.
Yeah, it's the tallest Capitol building, state Capitol building in the United States, and it was all decked out. You know, we're going to have to throw some pictures up on our Talking While Married Facebook and let people see what that looked like. But I'll tell you what, Lynn, other than my legs hurting because we stood for probably about 3 hours in that wonderful crowd to listen to George Strait and Watson, I forgot his first name, that came on before him,
who
was
Aaron Watson.
Who was also fantastic. Just what a great time, and everybody looked so nice, and everybody was so friendly. And I'll tell you what, I had a blast. So I was so glad that we were together doing that.
Yeah, and I felt a lot of cohesiveness amongst the people there. It was a good event. You know, but speaking of Texas, it's interesting because you and I were talking a little bit about Beto O'Rourke and all the attention that he's getting as far as, possibly making a run for president, which I have no idea what would even remotely qualify him to do so. But then Barack Obama wasn't qualified either, and he did it. So, yeah, that's kind of an interesting two different looks at different people there. And I haven't seen anything from Beto O'Rourke that I like. In fact, when I was looking at the border patrol statistics of people that have been apprehended and drugs smuggled, his area, El Paso, Texas, is probably, if not the biggest, it's one of the biggest, there. So,
Hang on,
he's.
Linda. No, you're absolutely right, Lynn. And of course, and maybe people don't know it, but just on the other side of the wall is Juarez, Mexico, which is one of the most violent cities, and it's pretty much a cartel run city that's in Mexico. And so, and of course, the 10 highway, Interstate 10, goes right there between the two countries, and you can easily see the wall that's in that area. But boy, I want to say a few things about Beto O'Rourke because that guy scares me, and let me tell you why. He reminds me of the white version of Barack Obama. He's young, he's tenacious, he is secretive, he's got a fake name. He's an Irish guy that tries to make himself sound Hispanic. That's why the Beto is there. He has hidden his criminal record for, I think it was DUI accident with injury, and hid that during the campaign. And of course, that came out and had some negative repercussions. And he tried to spin that all sorts of ways until the arresting officer's report somehow made it into the media, and you could see everything that was there, so there was no doubt about it. But the guy is an open borders advocate, and he nearly knocked a standing senator, our Senator Cruz, out of the box. I think Cruz only won by a few points, and Beto O'Rourke was infused with millions of dollars that came from out of state, a lot of it coming from Michael Bloomberg up in New York. The one thing, I mean, every time this guy opens his mouth, it's scary. And just recently, he opened his mouth and said, "Oh, we don't need the United States Constitution anymore. That document's outdated." So watch out, because Barack Obama came out of nowhere. And by the way, O'Rourke is like Barack Obama with regards to his lack of accomplishments as a politician. He really hasn't done a damn thing in Texas. But don't forget that Barack Obama was a state senator who never did a damn thing either. And all of a sudden, he was catapulted into the presidency. So we can't sell this guy short, and we need to be watching Beto O'Rourke.
Well, I don't know if you've followed, and I certainly haven't followed, but I've seen tidbits that are hilarious. So here's a guy who is a former congressman, right? 46 years old. He lost his Senate bid,
Yeah,
right?
but he's still a congressman. I think he's still a congressman. I don't think he
No, he's a former congressman.
did he have to give up his congressional
He's
seat to run?
out.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
he's
That's
out.
good. Okay.
Okay. In fact, he's not working at all right at this moment. But here's the funny thing. So what he's doing is he's taking a trip around parts of the country to clear his head. And he writes this diary and he puts things online, like a trip to the dentist where it shows the dentist going into his open mouth.
Nice.
He is posting all of these things about what he's doing in a day, if he's in a funk, what he had for breakfast, how he liked the pancakes and this and that, and he's going on and on. This is bizarre, okay? This is a very interesting guy, and I don't know. I don't think that even the Democrats are taken to this guy. So right now he's not working. He's on this random going around the country kind of thing, and I don't know what he's doing, but he's how some people put everything that they eat and everything that they do on Facebook? That's what he's doing. And I don't think it's very presidential or very I don't know. It's just what even CNN politics said that his excellent adventure drips with white male privilege.
Well, like I said, though, I'm a little worried about O'Rourke, just like I was about Barack Obama, because we have a very low informed electorate, as you know, and a lot of stuff gets by them. You know, don't forget, we are now the land of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Maxine Waters, Nancy Pelosi, Rashid Tlaib. Just a lot of people that are nothing but trouble in the United States, as far as I'm concerned, and it'll take us into nowhere but trouble.
Well, we have a long way to go to the 2020 election, but the word right now at this moment, which can change and probably will, is that the absolute by far front runner is Joe Biden.
Well, I think he'll really move up quickly. I think they're going to have a hornet's nest full of Democrats that are going to run for the presidency, and just like in every election, the herd will be called. But I brought up Nancy Pelosi, and how about her sort of disinviting President Trump to do the State of the Union? How about that?
That's never happened in the history of our country,
Well.
and it's so insulting. And I don't even know what to say because it's beyond the pale. But I love Trump's response.
Well, so can I steal some of that thunder? Because
Yeah, take
I like to talk
it.
about stuff like that. So President Trump says, "Oh, well, guess what? The government shut down, so you're not using any military aircraft. If you want to ride coach on Southwest Airlines or something, you can do
Go for
that.
it.
But you and your congressional delegation, who's planning to go to, I think they're planning to go to Brussels and Afghanistan and a couple of other countries. You're not going anywhere on any military aircraft while the government is shut down. I mean, these people just got back from a beautiful all expense at our expense and lobby expense paid vacation to go to Puerto Rico. I mean, to check on how the country's doing. Hell, you could pick up the phone or watch television and you know how Puerto Rico's doing. But Trump put the kibosh on it, and God bless him for doing that.
Well, I mean, they were going to a legitimate financial type of a meeting, but and Pompeo was going, and Republicans were going as well as Dems. But if Nancy Pelosi's game was, well, these poor people that are suffering in the shutdown, it's not the right time for you to give a State of the Union address, and it costs extra security and this and that. And he just beat her at her own game, which is great. I love it. So, this whole thing is ridiculous. And speaking of this whole conversation about how terrible the Democrats feel about these poor people that are without their paychecks, and I do as well, because as studies have shown and showed today, that people live paycheck to paycheck. So missing their paychecks is important. But that being said, the Democrats don't have any feeling for those people either, because they won't even come to the table to discuss getting back together. They want to do this just their way or the highway, and that's not going to happen with President Trump. So I don't see any sympathy on their part. Their entire conversation about feeling sorry for these people is absolutely false.
Well, Linda, I completely agree with you. I feel bad that the government workers are not getting paid at this particular time, especially the law enforcement people, the TSA, Border Patrol, people like that. But if you talk with the federal law enforcement officers, at least like we do, they're behind the president 100%, and they're willing to take some pain right now to have a much safer and secure country, immediately down the road. And, I understand that, some people are suffering. I know if you live paycheck to paycheck, I'm certainly that economic pain is there, but it's nothing at all in comparison to the angel moms and dads out there that have lost their children, or children that have been ruined forever because they have been the victim of homicides and serious bodily injury and sexual assault and kidnappings and robberies, you name it, by illegal aliens that have come into this country. So we need to build that wall and think about the tens of thousands of people in the United States. As a matter of fact, I think 1 in 9 is addicted to drugs, and the fentanyl problem. And I think we're losing, Linda, you were talking about it the other day, a month. How many people do we lose a month to drug overdoses relating to
fentanyl? Oh, you know what? I don't remember the number.
But it's scores, isn't it?
Well, it has now exceeded. It's exceeded traffic deaths for sure.
Correct.
Yeah, it's lots and lots of people. In fact, I was just reading how somebody was making it and selling it in their house, and they had fentanyl, and their little baby got a hold of it and died. You know, it's just a tragedy. And I read every single day about people that are dying from the drugs. So no, these guys losing their paychecks, while it's a problem, is not the problem that these people suffer, you know, with the drugs. And honestly, just the American people as well, with, let's just say in California or in Texas or in any of the states that have sanctuary cities where people have to pay more money to, you know, be taking care of these people. We have to pay their medical, we have to pay, you know, the kids in school and the lunch programs and the breakfast programs and all these different things that have to be paid for these people. Come into our country and work. We need you. Just do it legally. These caravans that are coming across right now and are coming up from Guatemala, you know, thousands more people. And until we get the wall built, this is going to continue on and on. How many people do we want to go? I have to tell you, Ron, when I flew today, I've been through these airports hundreds of times. And today, more than ever before, I noticed the lack of people speaking English. And it was passengers, it was workers, it was so many people. My Uber driver was Hispanic. He spoke English, but, you know, not great. But anyway, I'm just saying that I notice it more and more. So you can tell the impacts that more and more people are coming over the border. Listen, you and I have a place in Mexico. We love Mexico. We love the Mexican people. We want any of these people to come over legally. And one more thing, so that you can get a word in edgewise, is I was noticing when we were just talking about the drug problems, there's not just Hispanic people. In fact, the majority of the people coming over that southern border are not from Mexico anymore.
That's right.
And we've talked about that a number of times.
That's right.
But there are Chinese people coming over that border, and there are Asian people coming over that border. And just this week, there were people that were caught with, in Nashville, Tennessee, with like 5 giant suitcases full of drugs. And they were Asian, and that comes over that southern border.
Yeah.
So one of them was detained by ICE because they were not here legally. So, you know, I mean, it's not just one nationality. Now we're getting people from 75 countries.
Right. Well, listen, let's continue that discussion. I want to just run over and grab another cup of coffee. I know you're working in your office, and I'll meet you back in a minute.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Okay, I'm back and coffeed up. Listen, I wanted to continue our conversation because, you know, we did, you know, a couple of coffee conversations when we were down in Puerto Vallarta with not only with our Mexican friends, but just, you know, your classic everyday Mexican that we ran into, like servers and restaurants and just workers on the street. And I was so amazed that almost every single person that we talked with, and we talked with people from all socioeconomic strata, including, you know, cab drivers, they were all in favor of President Trump building the wall. And they were equally concerned about the lack of security and safety at their own southern border from all of these other countries coming up and invading Mexico. And look at what's going on, as has been going on for weeks and weeks now, in the city of Tijuana. They've literally taken over the entire districts that are near the wall, and it's causing the Mexican government tremendous problems. So,
well, it is.
Yeah, and the mainstream media kind of presents it as we're the bad guys when they don't even listen to the Mexicans themselves who are saying, no, this is not good for us. You know, the mayor of Tijuana has been just adamant about this. And you're going to see other Mexican mayors joining in, especially in the three different locations that these caravans intend to breach. And this caravan, and I don't know if it's going to sort of peter out along the way, but it's got over 2,000 people that are coming this way. And it was interesting because we were listening to Fox News or something yesterday, and you remember they interviewed a man and his wife that had a one-year-old child, and they had no money. The guy didn't even have a dollar on him, and they are taking this one-year-old child on this, I don't know, 1,800-mile trek, and then they wonder why their children fall ill, and a couple of them have died, and they try to blame the United States for this. These people are crazy, and people that are this irresponsible with respect to taking care of their children, I don't want them in this country because I don't want them to be here, whether they're illegal aliens or citizens.
Well, I do think that people in the United States are partially responsible for this, Ron. We're a lot responsible for it, and we're responsible for it in these ways. First of all, we provide them sanctuary in a lot of cities. Secondly, we provide them with medical insurance. We provide them with money. We provide them with driver's licenses. We provide them with all of their needs.
They get
so
IRS,
why shouldn't they?
They get IRS tax rebates, for God's sakes.
So why shouldn't they come here? So first of all, we need to stop giving them everything, and that would disincentivize them from coming here. Secondly, people like Pelosi and Schumer and Jerry Brown and all of these complicit media people and Beto O'Rourke and all of these types of people who are refusing to get this wall built and who are campaigning against it or physically doing things, you know, like obstructing like Pelosi is doing right now, those people are complicit as well, because if we had a wall that they could not get over, they would not be trekking through Mexico. Now, Guatemala and Nicaragua and
El Salvador,
those places are all that they're sending their people, you know, yeah, hey, go, you know, get some money, send it back. Okay, so you can't, you know, they're complicit as well. the people that are running these, because these are actual campaigns where they have signs up and it says,
let me tell you,
people
are making money off of this. People are making money off of this.
Absolutely.
Okay. And including people in the United States that are making money. You know, this whole thing is, there are so many moving parts to it, but again, it's not rocket science. Okay. The Democrats like Pelosi and Schumer and Beto O'Rourke and all these people, they want these illegal aliens in this country because they want blanket amnesty, and that creates a power. It significantly enhances their power base. And if those people get the vote, we are done. We are done as a democracy. We'll resort to a socialist third world crap hole like Venezuela. And look at several of these cities that are allowing illegal aliens to vote, San Francisco being one of them. But they're getting the cheap labor, okay? And it's always the globalist rich elites, okay? Just leave the uninformed, never been educated in these areas, American student out of there, because they're, you know, those people, those students are never taught anything. They're so undereducated in the ways of the world and socioeconomics. It's embarrassing. But take a look at what's happening. There are people making money off of these illegal aliens. And by the way, they're not only Democrats, they're Republicans making money off these people. It's
I don't disagree. That's why we're complicit.
Labor. Okay. But I'm going to disagree with you, and I think, you know, it's not, I'm disagreeing with your point, Linda, but yes, we create the incentives that make them want to come over here, and that situation is exacerbated, it's made worse by a just ridiculously stupid immigration policy system, okay? So all of that needs to be completely torn down and built up with some common sense. But you know what? Let me talk about the lack of common sense for a minute, and I'm not going to take all the oxygen out of the room. I want you to discuss some other things with me as well. But here's a great example. So the city of San Francisco, the city and county of San Francisco, is a sanctuary city. So just recently, an illegal alien from El Salvador by the name of Pedro Figueroa Zarcino, he's 33 years old. He gets snagged by San Francisco Police Department, who report him to ICE, and they attempt to deport him. Well, he got a deportation stay. Then he turns around and gets a civil rights attorney, and he sues the city and county because they're a declared sanctuary city, and he gets a settlement for $190,000. And he's here illegally and committing a crime. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So the taxpayers of San Francisco got to foot the bill on that. That's just one of thousands of examples.
Thousands. And the lawyer for Kate Steinle's shooter, he's appealing to have his gun conviction overturned. I mean,
they have a sanctuary city lawsuit against the police department.
They walk all over us. If we had the big wall and people couldn't get through, we wouldn't have these caravans coming up. I don't blame Mexico. I wish that they would stop them at their border, but I'm not sure if they can or they can't. You know, they don't have a humongous military. They don't have the infrastructure in place. So I don't know, you know, what their situation is. I think that they've been somewhat of a help to us in the current situation, but it's just going to get that much worse for them the more people that are coming up. And the longer this whole wall debate goes on, the more people are going to say, we better go now before they build that wall. We better go now. So let's get going. And that's what's happening. So yeah, this is a mess, and it's created wholly by our politicians who we pay to be there, who have not taken care of the business of the people. This should have been fixed years ago. Not just the wall, but the whole immigration system should have been fixed many years ago.
You know, I want to, and that's absolutely an excellent point. You know, I was just going to make a comment that, you know, the brand new Mexican president, Obregon, he has got to wake up because, you know, he ran on a ticket to increase job opportunities for Mexican citizens. And when all of these other people come into Mexico, you know, a lot of them don't go back to their countries. They stay in Mexico and they take jobs from Mexicans, okay, from Mexican citizens. And that's what the workers, you know, not the professional people, but the workers that are, you know, and I don't say this disparagingly, you know, God bless them all, but they don't have the level of education where they can have a professional trade. Okay, so we're talking about, you know, taxi cab drivers and servers and low wage workers. Some of these workers only make about $4 a day. Well, these people from Guatemala, from Honduras, from El Salvador, from all these other countries, from India, all of this, they come in and they take jobs from Mexicans. And listen, the kind of the wink wink kind of situation that's happened between the United States and Mexico has always been historically that the United States is a pressure relief valve for Mexico, because Mexico is consistently in dire straits economically, all right? And they educate only until about the sixth or eighth grade. Then after that, everybody's got to take care of their own education, and they have to work to get their own apprenticeship, things or trades, and they have to work on that. But that's not for all people, and so consequently, and then of course there's corruption in Mexico. And believe me, I don't want to throw stones at Mexico, because the United States has got its darn fair of corruption, and we see it every single day. So, and I love the Mexican people, so you know, God bless them all. And who wouldn't want to come to the United States under those circumstances? Okay, I totally get it. But Obregon's job in working with his Congress is to create job opportunities for Mexico. And his job, just like President Trump's job, his priority has got to be the safety and security of the country of Mexico and of Mexican citizens.
And I think it is. And I think that he's working towards that. You know, as opposed to, you had President Enrique Peña Nieto, who, you know, was taking huge $100,000 yes. bribes yes. from El Chapo.
Yes.
And, you know, El Chapo, in his trial, which is in, I think, Brooklyn, right, it's been going on for a while, and his mistress flipped on him in court.
Oh, I didn't hear about recently. That. I didn't
yeah.
hear. Oh, she's toast. And, she's toast.
Yeah. Well, I'm worried about, yeah, I'm definitely worried about her. But she definitely said that she was running drugs for him, and she talked about a lot of different things with him and gave up a lot of secrets. So, yeah, I definitely worry for her. But she was, you know, talking about all the different things that he did and she did, and she absolutely flipped on him. But then again, she was, you know, under arrest for the drug running too, so she did it to save herself, I'm sure.
Sure.
But how that's going to come out for her, I don't know. But hopefully they put that guy away, and, you know, some of these huge kingpins. But if they can't get their drugs over our border as easily as they can now, you know, I mean, just, you've got to start somewhere. It's like building blocks, and the building block, the first building block, has to be that wall, and so many good things can come after that, you know. But
correct.
if you're not even willing to take that first step, Americans should be completely angry and insulted that our politicians are doing what they're doing right now, and you know, just refusing to even come to the table. They call President Trump a baby, that he's having tantrums. I don't see it that way. I see it as, these people are ridiculous. They are not doing what we as Americans put President Trump in to do. They are deciding that their opinion is more important than ours as the American public and the voters. And they are obstructing everything that he wants to do. This is tedious for the country, Ron. I get tired of it every day. I'm, you know, kind of a news junkie, and I'm worn out with looking at it. I'm sure most Americans are. They get tired of this. You know, this is not what they should do.
Well, you know what? Let me talk about a different subject, but a related subject. And have you been following the Yellow Vests?
Oh, I have been following the Yellow Vests.
Well, I see some definite parallels, okay? So I want to talk about the Yellow Vests a little bit. Now, we didn't see any Yellow Vests in Italy because, you know, that Italy has not reached as much of a crisis as they have in France and in Germany, right? A couple of these other countries, or as they have in Great Britain. But primarily, you're seeing the Yellow Vests in France, and now it's starting up in Germany. And so when you take a look at what's going on in those countries with regards to the political power elite, like the president of France, Macron? Okay.
Macron, yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Just look at what's happened to their society. So first of all, in the EU, in the European Union, as we know, they have complete open borders. They've torn down all their walls. And so people can freely transit from country to country to country. And they've accepted, millions of people from Africa and from Eastern Europe and from Southeast Asia and also from India and the Middle East, and they have just completely moved into these countries and just completely changed everything in those countries, the culture, employment, the social services, everything is just crazy right now. But what has happened, at least in France, which I think is very, very interesting, is that all the pressure over the years was to move into the city, okay? So like people lived out in rural areas and they moved into the city for work. But now all the immigrants move into the cities for work, and it's called target zoning. It's a sociological phenomena that's been around forever, and that means, and it's called target zoning because it kind of looks like the rings in a target, and it moves outwards, right? So you got the bullseye in the center, and then it moves out, and each ring is a little bit more socioeconomically better. Okay, so the internal, the 10 ring, okay, the 10 part of the target would be your most socioeconomically disenfranchised, the poverty, the ghettos, and all of that. And then people want to get better, want to move out, and then they push people to the next level, the next level. Well, what has happened in France is that they pushed the working class out into these suburbs and out into the country where they're pretty much separated from everything that's happening in that country. And so now they're paying more for gas and they're paying more for utilities and it's harder for them to do their jobs. And this is really creating a lot of stressors for the French people and also the German people. And they are rebelling now because the government political elite, it was pretty much like, let them eat cake. If you take a look at what's happening in the United States, some of the same stuff is happening in the way that our governmental leaders, and I'm not talking about Trump, he's my champion as far as I'm concerned, but you take a look at the Pelosi's and the Schumer's and the Bill de Blasio's and all the rich and the Maxine Waters, and they are all the people, let them eat cake. Right? So our government is shut down, and what do the Democrats do? They run to Puerto Rico with their lobbyists and have a wonderful time on the beach getting a nice suntan while all these 800,000 federal workers are going without paychecks when they could fix this immigration issue and they could fix all this other stuff. That's all I wanted to talk about, and I want to take another break.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, just to stay in politics for a couple of more minutes, Ron, you know, one of the things I've noticed as they're bringing this new Congress in is the committees that people are getting assigned to. And I'm a bit appalled, to say the least, at some of the assignments. So one of the ones that I really disagree with is Maxine Waters, who is the head of the House Committee on Financial Services. Here's a woman who has had really, really questionable financial ethics in her career. Don't know how she got to be as rich as she is living in the community that she comes from.
Oh, wait a minute, but, Linda, let me interrupt you for a second. Maxine Waters does not live in the district that she represents. That's a congressional violation. I just wanted you
I should say purports to live
there
in.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay.
Because you know why? Because she's one of the rich elite. She doesn't want to live in South Central Los Angeles, okay? All right? It's a little bit too dangerous there.
But we're still in the politics of obstruction, destruction, and intimidation. The first thing that Maxine does when she gets on her committee assignment is she warns Wall Street that she's going to not let the banks and financial institutions run amok and lead the country into another crisis. And I would dare say that it was the Democrats who led the country into the big crisis with the housing lending policies that they had at the time. But either way, she is, you know, in kind of the mind of vengeance, retribution. Her whole platform is to get people back for things in her position. And that's not why we put people in these positions. We put people in these positions to do the work of the American people and not to, you know, just for their personal retributions. And I think I'm just tired of this. America is tired of this. I want somebody just to get in there and do a job. And then you put one of the new Muslim representatives, Ilhan Omar, you put her on the House of Foreign Affairs Committee. Okay, this is an anti-Semitic person who has made numerous anti-Semitic comments about the Israelis, and you want to put her on the Foreign Affairs Committee. And then you have Rashida Tlaib, who decides that as soon as she gets into Congress, she announces that she's going to go visit with the Palestinians. And this is what we want them doing on our dime? I mean, is just not what we're putting them there for.
Well, okay, but let me, and I see your point, but let me disagree with something, okay? And this is a problem that we're seeing, where we're seeing a paradigm shift in the United States, and who makes up the United States of America now with regards to our voting people, our electorate. Okay, so Tlaib comes from Detroit, and she is the daughter of Palestinian immigrants. Her ticket was running as a pro-Palestinian Muslim candidate, and she got the majority of the vote from the people in her district, which are Muslims. Many of them are Palestinians, and all of them are anti-Israeli. and anti-Semitic. So she is doing exactly what her constituents put her in there for. Now, currently, there's a petition. It's got over 160,000 votes from people that are in her congressional district that want to impeach her, but she's doing exactly what the voting majority put her there to do, and that's what's scary.
Well, it is scary, and I'm not sure if I agree with you on that, but I do agree with you that she was voted in, and all I can say to the people of Michigan is, what were you thinking
exactly
there?
Now, I would agree with you there, okay? And we have to watch out for that. And one of the reasons is, and I don't want to get into this whole religious thing, but she took her oath of office, and she wasn't the first thing to do that. Ellison was the first congressman to take his oath on a Koran, right? Tlaib took her oath of allegiance to the United States on the Koran. But here's the difference between taking the your oath on a Bible and taking your oath in the Koran. When you take your oath on a Bible, you are swearing to God that you are going to defend and protect the United States and everybody inside it against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. When you take your oath on the Koran, you are taking an oath of allegiance to Allah. And if you read the Koran, Allah is their supreme being, and he has authority over governments. That's the difference. One takes an oath to God to protect the Constitution. The other one takes an oath to another deity that has in their doctrine, in their religious doctrine, it goes over the country, goes over everybody. So it's a different allegiance, and that's what really bothers me. And I don't purport to be, you know, an expert on Islamic religion or anything, but I know the difference between, you know, taking an oath on the Koran and taking an oath on a Bible. And I just leave, you know, Christianity out of it. I'm just saying, you know, they're two different documents, and you got to know what they're doing when they take their oath on that document.
Yeah, I think that my major frustration, Ron, is I want to see people get in and do the work for the American people. Now we're so fractured and factionalized, and, you know, we've got the far, far left, and we've got the socialist left, and we've got the Republicans, and we've got the Tea Party, and we're just so all over the map. I feel like we're at such a stalemate in this country. Well, we are, and, you know, we're not getting anywhere with this. This was interesting that Republican Representative Tom Marino, he announced his resignation. He just was elected for, I don't remember how many times, five times, his fifth term in the House. He just was elected in November, reelected, and he announced that he's resigning and he's taking a job in the private sector. I'm thinking, why did you go through all that process of running and being elected just to leave?
Well,
I don't understand that.
Well, this is the first I've heard of it. And, you know, I personally, I don't know why he decided to do it, but I think it's a complete letdown and a betrayal of the people that voted for him and gave him money to run for office. So hopefully they're not going to go to another runoff election. And I don't understand the politics of it, how someone is appointed or whatever. But
yeah, they get appointed, I believe.
Does the governor, let me ask you a question. It looks like you know more about this than I do. Does the governor appoint that person like they did in the state of Arizona?
Well, the governor is Tom Wolf, and they probably will have to hold a special election to choose a successor.
Wow.
So, he only has a few days to announce what's going to happen with that.
Okay. Well, this is the first I've heard of it. So thanks for telling me about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Another thing that just happened in the Senate just very recently was that the Senate measure that would have banned abortion funds to be, you know, from federally funded was defeated. So the Republicans couldn't muster the 60 votes needed to approve a permanent ban on federal funding of abortion. So now we still have federal funding of abortion.
Well, you know, going back to, you know, this is, and we say this, you know, on our side as Republicans and conservatives, there are consequences for elections. And this is the consequence that the Republican Party and conservatives are going to have to deal with moving into the future and moving into 2020. And all of these Republican, you know, politicians have better get it together, and they have better start serving the needs and the and wants and desires of their constituency, or, you know, this will be the end of the Republican Party and conservatism. Okay, so they, yeah, they better wake up, better quit screwing around.
It's the same two all the time. It's Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski who voted against it. But what's interesting is Joe Manchin, who I've been impressed with lately. I know he's not your favorite guy, but I've been impressed with his voting lately. He voted for the funding ban, as did Democratic Senator Bob Casey. So, you know, we gained two and we lost two, so we stayed at our 53.
Okay.
So anyway, I wanted to talk to you about another little thing that I learned, which I didn't know. In fact, it's a conversation I want to have with our son, because what I was reading was kind of upsetting. I was reading about a woman who had a stroke in Wisconsin, and the ambulance was turned away from the hospital, and she ended up dying. So she really had the stroke right next to one of the Wisconsin's best stroke hospitals. But as I was reading this, what I learned is that hospitals can put the word out. I don't know how they do it, but they get the word out that, you know, we're not taking any more ambulance calls at this time. So it could be for hours or a day. I don't know, depending on, you know, what's going on there. And they won't take somebody. So where this woman would have had a chance at life, she lost her life, and I was not aware that hospitals can just say, no, we're not taking anybody else, and you have to go further away to get treatment, and possibly to a hospital that is not, you know, set up for what is wrong with you, as this woman who was next to a stroke hospital but couldn't go there and had to go to a different hospital who was not as proficient at handling strokes.
Wow. You know, I think we ought to talk to our paramedic firefighter, Rudy, and find out what the 411 is on something like that, because that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's called a diversion, and it's every day that happens with ambulances, that emergency departments and hospitals, they deploy this. It's a controversial tactic, turning would-be patients away. So, yeah, that's something I want to know more about, because it's something that everybody would have to think about, that you can't get where you need to go because the hospital's not going to see you because they have put out that they're not going to see people right then. Wow. So something to think about and something to know. And one more thing I want to tell you, and it's just heartbreaking news that I know that you don't know, because if you knew, you would have said something to me. Just this week, we had one of our bull riders, Mason Lowe, at the event in Colorado, the PBR event, fell off his bull, and he caught a hoof in the chest, which crushed his chest and his heart, and he died.
Oh, my God.
And, oh, that's, you know, horrible. He was, I think he was 24 years old, but... yeah, it's really, really heartbreaking, because these guys just put their heart and soul into this sport, and they're so brave and they're so tough. And, you know, even though they're wearing the vest, it's just one of those kind of freak things where that hoof came down in the right place.
Right.
Yeah, and nothing, you know, could diffuse that much weight, right?
Yeah, you know, something that of course you and I know it as, you know, as stock contractors and as, you know, competitors with our bulls in PBR, but we know the bullfighters, and this sport is so different on so many levels than other professional sports because these guys are actively competing with each other and against each other, but they are all so tight. It is like a brotherhood. They travel together, even competitors. They travel together. They eat together. They stay in hotels together. They share rooms together. Their families spend time together. They pray together. This is an amazing, unique group of athletes. And
when they drive up to an event, Ron, as you and I have seen, they're not driving up in a Ferrari.
Right.
They're driving up in some old beater car with a few of them.
Pickup trucks full of the guys,
right? Four or five of them.
And you'd see these guys in an elevator, and you wouldn't, unless they were wearing, you know, hats and, you know, boots and jeans. I mean, you wouldn't even know what these fellas do for a living. And they are so humble. They are so different than NFL players or baseball players or basketball players or tennis players. They're just a different breed of men. And God bless every single one of them. And I mean, you and I love to spend time with them. We joke around with them because we've got bulls. And you remember just recently at Madison Square Garden, I got my picture taken with Silvano Alves, you know, the three-time world champion, because he's the only guy that ever rode Ringo Kidd, one of our champion bulls, right? And we were laughing about it, you know. And I said, well, good luck to you, but I hope it never happens again.
Yeah,
but it's just so tragic when they lose one of their own. So, you know, let's say a little prayer for them tonight. And Linda, I've been up since 3:15. I know you've been up since 3:30, and my coffee's all done, and so am I.
So, okay.
Listen.
Well, you have a great night.
You too. Try to stay warm and dry in California. And we'll have another coffee conversation soon.
Okay.